Well, hello. Welcome to the Talking Information Center. My name is Rod, and today is Thursday, February 19th in the year 2026, and we'll be reading from the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday, September the 19th. And the front page of the Patriot Ledger today is a big headline all about President's Day Winterfest 2026. And what it is, I'll try to describe it to you. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different pictures of what went on during President's Day Winterfest 2026 in the city of Quincy. And then each of the photos has a caption. One has a couple of kids standing on a wall, another with an owl on a woman's hand as she's, you know, talking to people about what these owls do during the wintertime, et cetera, et cetera. That's actually half of the front page of the Patriot Ledger. Now, the news stories on the front page of the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday, the 19th of February, this headline, report, Hanover cop drinking at club before fatal crash. And the story is written by Amelia Stern. An off-duty Hanover police officer struck and killed a 23-year-old pedestrian after a night of drinking at a Brockton strip club, according to a police report. Thomas Hayes, 36, was arrested Monday, February 16th, and arraigned the following day in Brockton District Court on one count of leaving the scene of a personal injury and death and one count of motor vehicle homicide by negligence, according to court records. The charges stem from a fatal pedestrian crash that occurred in the early morning hours Monday near the intersection of Battles Street and Cross Street in Brockton. A not guilty plea was entered on both charges. Hayes was ordered held on a $15,000 cash bail, $5,000 more than the $10,000 he previously posted at the time of his arrest, court records show. A spokesman for the Brockton District Court Clerk's Office said Hayes had not been released as of Tuesday at 2 p.m. What happened? Just before 12:30 a.m. Monday, Brockton police received a report of a person lying unresponsive in the snow near the intersection. The victim, later identified as 23-year-old Alfredo Alves, was transported to Boston Medical Center South in Brockton, where he was pronounced dead at 1:39 a.m. from a severe skull fracture, according to the police report. Officers at the scene observed marks in the snow indicating Alves had been struck by a vehicle on Battles Street and launched across the front lawn of a property, the report said. A discarded jacket and clothing items remained in the snow. According to the police report, Hayes had been drinking before the crash with two friends. His friends told police they all met up at about 10 a.m. Sunday to attend a Daytona 500 party at a residence in Avon. At around 7:30 p.m., they visited a strip club in Brockton called the Boardroom Cabaret, where they stayed for approximately 2 hours, the report said. Multiple tabs had been opened under their names, the friends reported. Surveillance footage from the club captured the trio leaving at around 11 p.m. with Hayes climbing into the driver's seat of his wife's 2022 black Ford Explorer, the report said. The front seat passenger described Hayes driving as fast and generally aggressive, according to the report. About 6 minutes after leaving the club, Hayes hit something with the car, according to the report. His friend described feeling the vehicle jolt due to the collision, which shattered the windshield. Despite his friend's protest to stop, Hayes is reported to have told his friend he thought he hit a snowbank and would deal with it when they returned to Hanover, according to the report. After getting a ride home to his own residence, the witness went to the Brockton Police Department to inform them that his wife's vehicle may have hit something. Hayes was arrested without incident at around 7:10 a.m. Monday by Massachusetts State Police troopers at his home in Hanover. During the arrest, the detective noticed a strong odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from Hayes, the report said. Officers later located a black Explorer at Hayes' residence with heavy damage on the front passenger side bumper, headlight, hood, and bottom left windshield. Hayes was placed on administrative leave immediately following his arrest, Hanover Police Chief Timothy Kane said in a statement. We hold our officers to the highest standards of conduct, both on and off duty, Kane said. Accountability and transparency are essential to maintaining the public's trust. What's next? Well, Hayes' next court appearance is scheduled on March 31st in Brockton District Court. So we're reading from the Patriot Ledger here on this Thursday, February 19th. And the other story that's on the front page of the Patriot Ledger today, King Richard's Fair owner and former landlord in court. This story is written by Hannah Morse. Attorneys for the new owner of King Richard's Fair and its 98-year-old former landlord argued before a Superior Court judge in a duel over the attraction's lease and sale on Tuesday, February 17th. Lancelot Entertainment sued Alphonse A. D'Amico, Sr. in May 2025, claiming that he stymied lease negotiations in an attempt to create his own competing Renaissance Festival. The business seeks damages and attorney's fees to be determined at trial. D'Amico followed up with the counterclaims filed that September. D'Amico followed up with counterclaims filed that September. D'Amico alleges breach of good faith and fair dealing, unfair and deceptive trade practices, and negligent misrepresentation, and he also seeks damages. Attorneys for both parties appeared before a judge, Beverly Candone, in Plymouth Superior Court in Brockton, to argue the merits of their claims. Cannon took the arguments made during the 37-minute hearing under advisement. Through 2024, King Richard's Fair had operated at D'Amico's 80 acres at 235 Main Street in Carver since 1982. King Richard's Fair is a 16th-century themed festival featuring handmade crafts, food, musicians, singers, dancers, minstrels, mimes, jugglers, whip artists, magicians, knights jousting on horseback, a royal court, and King Richard himself. It's a destination for thousands of visitors from Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and throughout New England. The fair was sold to Lancelot by its founders in August 2024. The sale amount was previously undisclosed, but Avery Topple, an attorney with Sheehan Finney representing Lancelot, told Cannon that the King Richard's Fair was sold for $3.4 million. In order for the sale to go through, it required permission from D'Amico and payment to him in the amount that equaled 25% of the sale. Afterward, the two parties were in the process of negotiating a new lease, as the old one would expire at the end of 2024. The parties don't agree on how this process shook out. During the Tuesday, February 17th hearing, Lancelot's attorney painted D'Amico as a savvy businessman who torpedoed lease negotiations to buy time to create his own festival. In turn, D'Amico's attorney described Lancelot as a powerful entity taking advantage of a 98-year-old man who sought to leave a legacy for his family. Topol said D'Amico's conduct had effectively sabotaged the fair for 2025, describing a chaotic, rushed few months to get vendors, seek town permissions, and re-image King Richard's Fair to a new location. Was there a fair, though? Cannon asked. Yes, was the response. Part of D'Amico's argument was that he believed the $850,000 paid to him from the business sale came from an artificially deflated sale price, and that he never saw financial documents to confirm that this was the true amount. We don't know what the specific terms of the sale were, and we can't plead that. That's the point, said Stephen LaRose of Nixon Peabody, who is representing D'Amico. Topol said that while D'Amico had a lease provision guaranteeing him 25% of the sale, it did not mean he had the right access to financial documents, and that D'Amico's belief stems from comments made by an unnamed industry source and not from a specific fact. Additionally, court documents describe a memorandum of understanding that the two parties had signed, agreeing to a 10-year lease that would guarantee D'Amico at least $1.5 million in annual rent or percentages from various fair profit sources, whichever was greater. After D'Amico approved the sale, he claimed that Lancelot reneged on this agreement and returned to him with a $400,000 annual rent proposal. Then they get him with the real kicker. That's when they tell him, after they've got his consent, they say, guess what, Mr. D'Amico? If you don't agree, if you don't like our new deal, we bought the property next door, and we're going to move the whole fair over there. So take it or leave it, LaRose said in describing Lancelot's negotiation tactics. That property was Edaville Family Theme Park, which Lancelot would ultimately purchase for $8.7 million in February 2025, and where King Richard's Fair would relocate for its 44th season. Topol countered that a memorandum of understanding is not intended to be legally binding. He confirmed that Lancelot did inform D'Amico in fall 2024 that they were looking into buying another property as lease negotiations dragged on. You can do that in negotiations. You can actually say, we actually found this better option, so you're going to have to do better, or else we're going to go with that. That's what happened in negotiation. That's what happens in negotiations, Topol said. It's entirely reasonable for Lancelot to have explored these possibilities. Further, Topol said Lancelot had every intention of continuing King Richard's Fair on D'Amico's property, and as a tenant, it did not have leverage. He told Cannon that while D'Amico is claiming unfair and deceptive practices, these claims cannot be made every time negotiations go south. If you start allowing these claims at any time a party backs out of a negotiation when things don't go well, then you're just going to be stifling free negotiations, he said. LaRose said that D'Amico did not have legal counsel at the start of the negotiations and that the Carver property was a key, critical piece of his legacy. It is core to his family. He wanted this property to be in good stead when he eventually, hopefully not anytime soon, leaves the earth and leave it to his family. In court records, Lancelot cited public records in its claims that D'Amico attempted to create his own Renaissance Festival and stalled lease negotiations, culminating to a full stop in discussions on February 20th, 2025. This was the day after Edaville's sale to Lancelot was finalized. The records include creation of a new entity called Camelot Renaissance Village Limited Partnership, with D'Amico's niece listed as the registered agent on January 28, 2025. The submission of a Town of Carver automatic amusement and entertainment license application and one-day special liquor license on February 23, 2025, for an outdoor live entertainment event with 8 stages for several dates from August through October of that year. An email sent by D'Amico's niece to town officials on March 3, 2025, referencing a discussion of a of the possibility of hosting a Renaissance fair at 235 Main Street. In his counterclaim filing, D'Amico said each of the public record documents speaks for itself and denies any characterization that differs from or misstates its terms. Lancelot claimed that D'Amico changed the locks and prevented its representatives from accessing the property in early 2025, but D'Amico said they had no right to the property after the lease ended and locked the property once it became clear that Lancelot was not acting in good faith on the lease extension to protect it from further unauthorized access by anyone who could act with bad intent. The company alleges that D'Amico repeatedly made false statements to Lancelot and that his conduct constitutes unfair and deceptive trade practices. From D'Amico's perspective, he described hardball lease negotiations, including misrepresentations, intimidation, and threats. D'Amico was to get at least $1.5 million in annual rent from Lancelot or various percentages of sales from the fair, whichever was greater, according to a written memorandum between the two parties. As part of the lease agreement, Lancelot was required to pay D'Amico 25% of the amount that King Richard's Fair sold for. He received $850,000, but said he was not supplied with financial documentation to confirm that this was the correct amount. He believes that the sale price was artificially lowered to reduce the sale partition payment that was owed to D'Amico. Months after D'Amico agreed to the sale and signed the Memorandum of Understanding, he said that Lancelot came back on October 20th, 2024, with a draft proposal lease that sought to set the rent at $400,000. He said Lancelot shockingly suggested that if the parties could not agree on the draft lease, it was prepared to relocate our business. Lancelot also sent D'Amico a cease and desist letter that accused him of actively attempting to sabotage Lancelot's ongoing business operations at King Richard's Fair. Had D'Amico known the Lancelot entities were going to obtain this approval and then wholly disregard their prior representations and try to squeeze entirely different lease renewal concessions out of him, including drastically lower rent, he never would have consented to the purchase, the counterclaim filing said. D'Amico claims that he continued to negotiate the lease until the full truth of Lancelot's intentions was revealed in its purchase of Edaville in February 2025. He claimed he was unaware that Lancelot was in talks to purchase Edaville during its lease negotiations over the summer. Additionally, D'Amico claimed that Lancelot stole large wooden entrance doors and caused property damage. D'Amico's claims include breach of contract, breach of good faith, and fair dealing and negligent misrepresentation, as well as unfair and deceptive conduct. In a motion to dismiss filed in November 2025, Lancelot says that D'Amico's counterclaims lack factual support and do not plausibly describe unlawful conduct. So that's that story about King Richard's Fair and the owner and the former landlord who went to court. So this is the Talking Information Center. We're reading from the Patriot Ledger today on this, the 19th day of February 2026. Okay, now let us go to page 2 of the Patriot Ledger today. And this story, which is quite interesting, comes from USA Today Network out of New England. Average ER wait times in Massachusetts among the longest in the U.S. Massachusetts tied with Rhode Island for the third longest average emergency room wait time in the U.S., according to Becker's Hospital Review, a healthcare news publication based in Chicago. Patients in the Bay State spend an average of 220 minutes, or 3 hours and 40 minutes, waiting in ERs, according to the collected data. The average wait times were calculated from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Timely and Effective Care data set, which compiled figures from hospitals in 2024 and published the findings in November 2025. Nationwide, the average median time patients spent waiting in emergency rooms in 2024 was 161 minutes, or 2 hours and 41 minutes, the publication said. Here's how Massachusetts compares to other states. These are the states and districts with the longest average emergency room wait time, including ties, according to Becker's Hospital Review. Number one, Washington, D.C., at 5 hours and 1 minute. Number two, Maryland, at 4 hours and 6 minutes. Massachusetts tied for third place at 3 hours and 40 minutes. Number four, Rhode Island, tied for third place at 3 hours and 40 minutes. Number five, Delaware, 3 hours and 36 minutes wait time in the ER. Connecticut, 3 hours 16 minutes. Number seven, New York, 3 hours and 12 minutes in the waiting room of the ER. North Carolina, 3 hours and 10 minutes. Vermont, 3 hours and 5 minutes. And number 10, New Jersey, at 3 hours and 3 minutes. So we're reading from the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday. It is the 19th day of February. And we're going to go here to the business section of the Patriot Ledger. And this headline, out of Washington, D.C., is the Dateline: home builder sentiment remains subdued. U.S. home builder sentiment deteriorated in February, weighed down by persistently high land and construction costs, as well as still elevated house prices relative to income that are keeping prospective buyers on the sidelines, a survey showed on February 17th. The National Association of Home Builders Wells Fargo Housing Market Index eased 1 point to 36, remaining below the 50 break-even point for 22 straight months. Economists had forecast the index climbing to 38. Confidence has remained depressed despite attempts by the Trump administration to make housing more affordable, including purchases of mortgage-backed securities and banning institutional investors from buying single-family homes. Builders reduced their expectations for future sales as buyers report affordability challenges, which is contributing to declining consumer confidence for the overall economy, said NAHB Chairman Buddy Hughes. President Donald Trump's sweeping tariffs have raised prices for building materials and appliances, while his immigration crackdown has undercut labor supply. Building lots are also scarce. Soft housing demand has led to an overhang of unsold new homes, another challenge confronting the builders. So we're reading here from the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday. It is the 19th day of February. So we're reading on this story here now. It's DeSantis focus on political future. With Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' last regular session of the state legislature having passed its midpoint, the Republican chief executive and his wife, First Lady Casey DeSantis, appear focused on securing their political future, whatever it is. The governor is widely expected to run for president again in 2028. Casey DeSantis still could emerge as a candidate later in 2026 to succeed her husband, although the governor's race is getting crowded and led by Republican favorite U.S. Representative Byron Donalds, who's been endorsed by President Donald Trump. She's also now being talked of as a possible congressional candidate for the seat held by retiring Representative Neil Dunn, a Republican of Florida. But the governor and his wife this session have already been redoubling their efforts to stake out policy positions popular with the Make America Great Again movement by Donald Trump. So we continue to read here from the Patriot Ledger. I'm looking for the sports section of the Patriot Ledger as we wind things down. Lure of the playoffs, Fish Sisters help Milton and Hoops postseason drought. If you see Victoria Fish near a field or a court, chances are Sophie Fish is close by and vice versa. The sisters play three varsity sports together at Milton High. Victoria, a senior, is a middle hitter in volleyball in the fall and basketball forward in the winter and a softball catcher in the spring. Sophie, a junior, is an opposite hitter in volleyball, a guard in basketball, and an outfielder in softball. All those hours spent at practices, games, and team bus rides mean a lot of time to bond. I think it's really beneficial for us playing three sports together, not only in high school, but just growing up like that, said Victoria, who will play Division I softball at Holy Cross. We've been on the same softball teams growing up. We know each other's styles and how we play and how to help each other and how to pick each other up. It's really important connection to me, agreed Sophie. I feel we get along better as teammates than if we weren't siblings. We have a connection on the court, on the field. Both sisters are prolific sluggers in softball, but this winter they've managed to hit a home run with the basketball team as well, so to speak. So that's the reading of the Patriot Ledger on this Thursday, February the 19th, from the Talking Information Center. I hope you have a real nice day.